So it's a very odd time to be alive, as they say.
The Wire.
Vanuatu is currently leading 132 nations to ask the world's highest court, the International Court of Justice, to recognise the harm caused by climate change and outline countries' climate obligations. A representative from the Vanuatu Special Envoy for Climate Change and the Environment, Ralph Riggenvanu, told the court, "We find ourselves on the front lines of a crisis we did not create, a crisis that threatens our very existence." Riggenvanu says he is hoping for a new benchmark to be set by the court that establishes countries growing greenhouse gas emissions are in breach of international law. I spoke to Dr. Justin Sobion from the University of Auckland about the case. Dr. Sobion is at the court in The Hague, representing Grenada, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and St. Lucia. I started by asking if he could explain the argument behind the case.
Yes. So Vanuatu in 2021, on behalf of the Pacific Island Students Fighting Climate Change, they decided to take climate change to the International Court of Justice. Now, it's only states that are parties or have legal standing before the court. So that's why even though individual group, NGO, which is Pacific Island Students, they had to get a state to support them. So essentially, the legal questions is split up in two parts before the court are, what are states' obligations to protect the climate system and the environment, especially on behalf of, states, vulnerable states, and present and future generations? And what are the consequences if states breach those obligations? So it's very historic because it's the first time that the International Court of Justice in its almost 80 years since it's been established is deciding states' obligations and consequences for the adverse effects of climate change.
And what will happen if the case succeeds?
It's not a litigation. What it is called an advisory opinion. And an advisory opinion of the court is non-binding. So the court is just going to give what its view on international law is with respect to obligations and consequences if states fail to breach their obligations to protect the climate system. That being said, I know a lot of persons may be wondering, why go through all this hassle for an opinion that is not binding? But even though the court is going to give an opinion, this opinion, and it's not binding, the law that the court is going to interpret is binding. So the court is going to look at treaty law, it's going to look at the Paris Agreement, the UNFCCC, it's going to even look at human rights obligations. The Global South is especially playing that, and customary international law. And this could be used as a judicial tool for when we come to COP negotiations. It could also open some judicial floodgates for states to actually take legal action against those main climate polluters, such as maybe the US, China, Japan, European Union, for example. So I think for that reason, the advisory opinion is critical in this time.
And how did the students who started the case bring it all the way to the ICJ?
So this started with 27 law students sitting in the classroom at the University of South Pacific in Vanuatu, discussing how could we bring climate change, or how could we bring climate justice to the International Court of Justice. And as I said, they needed a state, and this was in 2019, just before COVID exactly. And they were actually thinking, we need a state to help us. We need a state to assist us. So they reached out, actually. One of them at the time reached out to the New Zealand Center of Environmental Law. That's how I got involved in the case, because I was one of the PhD representatives on the center. And we were providing advice. And eventually, that is Prue Taylor, myself, Klaus Bosselmann at the time, And eventually, there was a lot of political lobbying, and they got Vanuatu to take up the case. Of course, it originated within Vanuatu. How I got involved was that they turned to me to say, well, we have basically the Pacific states, that is Fiji, Fiji, Solomon Islands, what have you, Tonga, Cook Islands, supporting us, New Zealand, Australia, of course, came a little bit after. But we need the Caribbean states to assist. So it was really a political campaign at the beginning. And once the resolution was passed at the United Nations General Assembly in March 2023, that's when the legal landscape or the legal movement started. And so this is where we are now.
And what are your thoughts on how this process has gone so far?
There were a lot of ups and downs, but I think we are now in the upswing with the ups. At the beginning, states were a little bit conservative. States were a little bit cautious. States were a little bit non-committal. I guess that's the usual things. States want to see who's going to take the first move, the first step. I know there was some frustration sometimes when we were lobbying for the political aspect. They were empty halls, empty rooms. Instead of ambassadors coming to meetings, maybe they would send their junior staff members. They were the usual things like, oh, we'll get back to you, we're taking instructions. But from the Caribbean perspective, I could say we were the first grouping, the Caribbean, this is the CARICOM, the Caribbean community, the group of English-speaking Caribbean states. We were the first grouping, even before some Pacific states that endorsed Vanuatu's initiative. And this was in March 2022, if I recall. We were the first grouping that endorsed the initiative. And out of the 15, well, the 14 CARICOM states, we have 9 states actually participating. So that's almost more than 60%, even close to 70% of Caribbean states, if we do the maths, that are participating. So I think now the mood is we're on the upswing. We're all looking for ambitious, well, this is SIDS, Small Island Developing States, especially the Global South. We're all looking for a very ambitious, progressive advisory opinion.
And are you optimistic this will succeed?
Well, I would more say cautious optimism. I say cautious because we can't be complacent and sit on our laurels and say, well, the court is going to rule, give us a favorable or something that recognizes that climate change is something that is going to affect future generations, or going to affect, well, affecting us now, present and future. I don't think we have a hard work to do because we do recognize that the judges are human beings. The judges are not scientists, they are lawyers or were lawyers at some point in time of their profession. And there's a lot of science that is intertwined in climate change, as you know. So it's how do we persuade, excuse me, how do we persuade 15 judges who are legally trained on the science of climate change? Even the lawyers themselves, we also have to grapple with. And then we also have to realize that, as in any sort of tribunal or panel, there are going to be conservative judges. There are going to be judges who may not be experienced in international environmental law. And there are going to be judges who are a bit radical as well. So we are trying to find a balance and see, we kind of identifies which judges need a little more pushing, which need a little more persuasion. So as I said, we are just cautiously optimistic and fighting for balance and favorable advisory opinion.
And when will we know the court's ruling?
Well, there are many theories on that. We are in December. If we have looked at other advisory opinions in the past, some have said, some experts, especially who have appeared before the court in numerous occasions, have said the minimum may be 6 months. A cautious estimation is probably 8 to 12 months or 1 year. But at the same time, I know the court is treating this advisory opinion very, very seriously. We had 91 written statements at the beginning, which they said was a record. The court to have so many states participating. Of course, states were enthusiastic to share their views or their ideas on obligations and consequences of climate change. So with that being said, and then this advisory opinion came just so close to Christmas, the hearings. We were actually expecting it to start off, kick off early in the new year. So the court is showing some sense of urgency. So I would estimate within maybe summertime in the Northern Hemisphere, maybe July, August, we can see an advisory opinion coming out from the court. Again, this is just my estimation, but we will see all things remaining equal.
That was Dr. Justin Sobion from the University of Auckland on a case currently at the International Court of Justice that could redefine countries' obligations under international law to mitigate the harm of climate change.